Okay, so today we're checking in with Dave Murphy, the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources here in Quincy, to get a little update now that spring weather is approaching, a lot more folks getting outdoors and enjoying the city's parks and recreational areas. And Dave, that is all under your purview. How are you?
Doing very well, Joe. Thank you for having me on today.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. And ironically, you were the very last in-person guest last year in 2020, just before the pandemic hit. And at that time, I remember we talked about how outdoor space was going to be at a premium, you know, because of the pandemic. And boy, has that not proved to be true, yes?
We saw probably as much use in our park system during the pandemic as any of the year in recent memory. I think with many of the gyms being closed and a lot of the exercise studios, dance studios, et cetera, being shut down, everybody feeling cooped up, being in quarantine, that, you know, our park system became a critical way, not just for people's physical health, but for their mental health as well. So, you know, I think that, you know, our parks, I've always thought they've played a critical role in our community, but I think over the course of the last 12 months or so, they've really, really helped our residents, you know, deal with a very difficult time.
Yeah, I know in the beginning there had to be all kinds of obviously COVID restrictions with the terms of capacity and, you know, social distancing, sanitizing, all those things. Is that still in play in the parks?
It's still very much in play. Yeah, I think people are fatigued with COVID, but it's still out there. I mean, it's still something that we're taking very serious and we're dealing with on a regular basis. I am very proud of our efforts to date. In fact, Michelle Hanley, our Director of Recreation, was nominated for a national award based on how the Recreation Department handled their summer program last year. If you remember, you know, last summer, people weren't leaving the house. We
Yes.
were kind of grown accustomed to being able to manage COVID a little bit better than we were at the beginning. But when we ran that summer rec program without incident, I might add, that was a pretty unique program. And many cities and towns simply just eliminated programming all throughout the summer, which was really tough, especially for kids that didn't have the structure of a regular school day, whether sporting program, dance classes, et cetera. So the rec program played a real critical role for our young people last summer. And we also did the park monitoring program, if you remember. We had people, college students that would have otherwise been working, that were unemployed, that we were able to put to work monitoring our tennis courts and basketball courts. And we had facilities open before any other community. Now, the downside of that is we had people coming from far and wide to come to Quincy to play basketball and tennis, and we really had to manage that. So it's been the most unique year of our lifetimes, but I think it was one that, you know, if you're willing to think creatively and if you're willing to have a can-do attitude instead of a can't attitude, you can really kind of separate yourself from the pack. And I think with the help of the Recreation Department, we had as best year as we can under the circumstances.
Yeah, no, I remember it clearly. There had to be hand washing stations installed, I know, in some locations. And again, certain numbers of people on courts at certain times, you know, everybody kind of sharing, if you will, and much based on the honor system too.
Yeah, at the end of the day, Joe, I mean, we can put up signs and we can do some enforcement, but at the end of the day, we're counting on people to make the right decisions by themselves, by the family, and by the community. And, you know, there's an age gap there. I think most adults understand the seriousness of COVID. Most of their parents are older and they're looking to protect other people. You know, our issues are with young people that think they're invincible and they're going to live forever. And, you know, sometimes the teens at the basketball courts need to be reminded that COVID is still out there and it needs to be taken serious. But by and large, I think we haven't seen any issues. You know, I know our youth sports programs operated somewhat successfully through the course of last year, and the presidents and leadership in those groups were excellent in putting in specific protocols, working with us as facility operators. And there were a couple minor bumps in the road, nothing serious, but they were managed very well. And the young people got to go out and have as normal a year as possible under the circumstances.
Yeah. Do you know where there'll be any kind of restrictions this year at outdoor spaces?
Yeah, there'll still be restrictions. We follow the state guidelines. Governor Baker just issued his, you know, 4-1 guidelines this week, limiting the amount of people you can have in outdoor spaces. I know that we're in that unique fall 2 season, if you will, with the high school sports. So the football programs are out there, and the athletic directors of both schools have done an excellent job in coming up with a system that allows parents from both the home schools and away schools to attend I do hope that we can continue to expand that. We do have the space at our outdoor facilities. You know, basketball, when you're playing it into a gym, should be handled differently than a football game, a baseball, softball, lacrosse, et cetera, which we're coming into the spring. So, and again, Joe, I mean, I think to your earlier point, it really comes down to us all working together. You know, the folks that are at these games and, you know, attending their children's or their friends' games need to be smart about what they're doing. They need to make sure they continue to wear the mask and continue to social distance as much as possible and take it serious enough that hopefully, you know, the more serious we take it, the sooner this thing ends.
Yeah. How has your staff been able to cope during this time, Dave, in terms of, you know, keeping up the facilities and also just staying healthy themselves?
Yeah, we've had a lot of support from the mayor's office and municipal finance office and utilizing some of the federal money that's been made available to manage COVID. So we've put some pretty specific protocols in place about, you know, making sure that we're not putting multiple people in a truck unless it's absolutely necessary. And if so, wearing masks at all times. And our folks, you know, we remind them regularly that, you know, that this is a serious issue. Now, you know, the park and forestry, we work outdoors 90% of the time, so we have that in our advantage. But at the same time, whether it's showing up in the morning to the lunchroom to get your assignments or the break room, you know, we do lunch and break differently. They take it out in the field instead of coming back to the office. So there are little things that we've been able to do. We haven't had an outbreak here. We've had one or two isolated cases that are usually caught from a family member. I went through COVID in December, you know, as a result of a family member getting it. So it's out there. It's going to happen. And fortunately enough, most of us will get through it. And unfortunately, some won't.
Yeah. Did you notice kind of more wear and tear on equipment than normally because so many more people were using the facilities?
A little bit, yeah. You know, we did see, especially in the what I'd refer to as our passive recreation areas, our walking trails and those parks, that people were just out looking to exercise. Like I said, you know, many of our basketball courts were very attractive to folks from the region that had their own communities completely shut down all their courts. So, you know, we did see quite a bit of activity. Now, we are on the tail end of a $38 million investment that was led by the mayor into our park system. So, you know, we do have great new facilities. So not only were their facilities closed, but then they realized, you know, holy smokes, look at all these new parks and facilities that Quincy has. And, you know, I think we're going to see that this year too. I think we'll see a lot of people coming from around the region because whether it's Kincaid Park or the Mount or some of those other locations, you know, a lot of our facilities are new, not all of them, but a lot of them are new, and that they became very attractive, not just to Quincy residents, but people from all over.
Sure. And there, a new resource has developed, yes, to kind of find those locations. Tell us about this this online trail map system, if you will.
Yeah, Julie Sullivan, who was hired as our environmental scientist as the Department of Natural Resources, has been fantastic. She's worked on a number of projects for us, including Butler's Pond and Sailor's Pond. But as the pandemic evolved and we saw how our parks were being used, you know, one of the things that I'm proud of is our ability to adapt to the public's need. It's not our job to tell the public how to use the parks. It's our job to assess what the public needs are and then adapt to those needs. So what we noticed during the pandemic, you know, as I mentioned, when the gyms were closed and the all the exercise facilities, we saw a number of classes, self-defense, aerobics, exercise, you name it, cross-train, CrossFit, all those folks were in the parks. But we also noticed an incredible amount of foot traffic in a lot of our passive areas, our hiking trails. And Julie got the idea of putting together a full mapping system using GIS. So she had the handheld GIS system and would go through a number of locations in Quincy. Now we started with about a half dozen and that grew to a total of 18 locations, some of which are under the jurisdiction of the DNR. Mm-hmm. Some of which are state locations, some of which MWRA has Nut Island. So she's put together a very interesting program. You know, we've called it Hike Local. And it's a list of 18 different locations where people can go out for a walk outside in some of our beautiful park locations. She's included some of the historical facts about those locations, yeah, which I think people will find fascinating. And, you know, as a lifelong resident, I think I take for granted how many people don't know about some of these places. And I think that Julie's project is really going to further open up some of these locations and, you know, hopefully build some stewardship too. Now, I think the more people use Faxon Park and Marymount Park and the Crusher and Squaw Rock and Squanum Point and some of these other locations, you know, they tend to take ownership of these natural resources and help us not patrol the police, but keep them clean and really advocate for them with other residents. So, you know, we're very excited about this project. It's really cool. Julie, she had an intern, Jacqueline Devlin, helped her quite a bit on it as well. The city's GIS department has been extremely helpful in getting this thing launched, and it can be found right on the city website under the Department of Natural Resources. And it also has a little QR code. So if you go on our website and snap the QR code right in your handheld device, you can follow the trails as you're in any one of these 18 different locations. So you can learn about some of the historic markers that are on these properties, whether it's Massachusetts Hummock or Caddy Park or as I mentioned, Squaw Rock. So it's a really cool project. And I think that people will be interested in going to some of the places that they haven't gone already. And, you know, if they're out there hiking the Blue Hills or Marymount Park, that they may try one of the other 16 different locations in Julie's program.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like you say, people that have lived here all their lives may not even be aware of some of those places. Or there's still, you know, many new people coming to the city all the time. And as we all know, we're so in tune to being online these days that that's probably the first place they're going to go to look for that kind of information. So that'll be a handy thing for them to have too.
You know, we live in a very unique place that I think sometimes we take for granted. You know, we have the Blue Hills to the west and we have the ocean to the east, and the amount of geographic and ecological diversity that we have is often taken for granted. We're a city, so people don't think of us in those terms. But I think the folks that utilize this program and take a walk along the waterfront down to Nut Island and enjoy the views down there, especially at sunrise or sunset, mm-hmm. people that hike through the Blue Hills, people that go to Squaw Rock and see the geological formations out there at Chapel Rock, it really is incredible what we have right here in our own backyard. And we're just trying to highlight that. You know, you know how I feel about the city. And I think we're trying to share as much of that with our residents as possible.
Yeah, I mean, and to your point about stewardship too, if people find these places and enjoy them, they want to keep them nice, right? So they can continue to enjoy them and their families too.
Right, which is a good segue for me to put a plug into Cleaner Greener Quincy, which we had to cancel last year because of the pandemic.
Yes.
But we're going to do a Cleaner Greener Light this year on May 1st. It's always the first Saturday in May. This Saturday it's early, it's the 1st. And we do encourage people to put together small pods, small groups that they can work together in, you know, recognizing social distancing and mask wearing, et cetera. But the city will return to supporting a lot of the community groups that participate at the neighborhood parks, their schoolyards, the marshes, et cetera. So we are queued up for Saturday, May 1st to do Cleaner Greener. Now, unfortunately, we're going to have to cancel the citywide celebration barbecue that we typically have at the end of the event for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But we do encourage folks. We will support folks with tools and T-shirts and bags and trash pickup, et cetera. For those that skipped a year last year and are looking to get out of the house and do something productive in the community. And certainly our trail system is a great place to focus on if people are looking for projects.
Oh, that's great. Are there going to be special Cleaner Greener T-shirts this year, Dave?
There will. We looked at doing Cleaner Greener masks, but we were hoping that was that was on the TLM. Maybe we'll incorporate some design on the T-shirt that recognizes what we've all gone through with this pandemic.
I think that'd be real appropriate. Hopefully they'd be a collector's item, never have to be used again.
Right, right.
But yeah, I mean, they're like, for instance, Friends of Faxon Park, they have their own cleanup coming up actually this weekend, but I'm sure they'll participate in that as well. And there are other smaller groups. The garden clubs I know are very active in that as well. And you can have your own just neighborhood group, right? Of three or four people keeping socially distanced and cleaning up your own street.
Absolutely. Yeah. If there's a particular location that people are interested in, they can call us at 617-376-1251. And if they're not tied in with a group and they just want to contribute, we can connect them with one of those other groups. Now, of course, you know, we're going to keep social distancing in mind and make sure that we do it in a safe manner. But whether it's an individual or whether it's a group, the city is happy to support people when they want to help us out.
Yeah. Any kind of major projects for 2021? I know the Marymount Parkway improvement project is well underway. I think there's some talk about making more improvements to Faxon Park. What's on your agenda?
Yeah, we have quite a few. The Marymount Parkway project is underway right now, which you'll see the work being done by CNOT and his underground utility work, so we can take down the really unattractive light poles and wires. You know, it is a parkway. It goes through our most popular park in the city. You know the connection with Olmsted and Elliott and some of the other most famous landscape architects in our country's history. And we really want to give it a look commensurate with the significance in the history of the park itself. So right now they're doing the underground utility piece. The next phase of that will be doing the sidewalks and the road over from the parkway from Hancock Street down to Southern Artery. At one point, we're going to have a landscaped island in the middle, similar to what you'd see at Russell Park or Elm Ave, with a lot of color and attractive plantings, historic lighting. Really make it really so when people drive, it's a heavy commuter road. So when people drive through there, they know that they're in a beautiful and historic park. We're also completing a project that was started 20 some odd years ago at Upper Marymount, where we have the granite columns going in, and there's a wrought iron fence similar to what you'd see at the public garden in town. Really set that off. That was a design that was done in 1937 by Herbert Kellaway, who was another Olmsted associate. And the fountain went in quite a few years ago. And now we're finishing off the granite pillars in the wrought iron fence this spring. After that, we'll be doing some improvements to Lebreck Field and Howes Neck, putting a brand new playground down there, doing a walking trail we mentioned, encouraging health and wellness in response to the pandemic. We're putting a perimeter walking path, much like we did at Kincaid, so the people in the neighborhood that just want to go out and walk a couple of miles can go out and do that. We're talking about building a brand new playground at the Swanham School. That's one of the playgrounds that we have not completed yet. We're waiting to see what the shakeout was in the design of the school construction project out there. So working with the community, we've designed a new playground that we're going to be installing this summer. Faxon Park is another project that we intend to do some significant investing in. We've been working with the friends and the counselor down there to come up with an appropriate plan. Faxon Park, you know, we talk about walking trails. Faxon Park has a pretty unique character, and it's still a very wooded area. So we do want to maintain the character of that park without overdoing it as it relates to recreational facilities. So, you know, maybe enhancing the walking trails that are there. There's talk of putting in the city's first disc golf. I don't know if you're familiar with disc golf, but it's basically a frisbee golf. It's growing wildly in popularity.
Yeah, that's where you shoot your frisbee into those chains, the basket of chains up on a pole.
And people of any age can play it. You know, we find it to be very popular with a group that the parks don't necessarily serve, that kind of 20 to 40 group would go out and play some disc golf. It's being featured now on ESPN. So it's growing rapidly in popularity. And we think it's a good location for it. It doesn't take away from the character of the park. You can play in a relatively wooded area. So potentially some disc golf, potentially new picnic pavilion up there as well too. So there's a phased plan for Faxon Park. And like I said, we want to implement some improvements without taking away from the real character of the park up there. So we've got a pretty aggressive agenda. We're in design and engineering the bridge that goes down Marymount Parkway across Blacks Creek. The state has a rating from 1 to 5, 5 being the worst. That's currently a 4. So we're in the design and engineering to replace that bridge. And we'd also like to kind of tie that into the designs we're doing for the park. So not just build a functional bridge, but actually make it look attractive and fit in with the parkway theme. At some point, we're also looking at building connectivity within Marymount Park, much like we mentioned the Olmsted and Kellaway plans. Pine Island right now is very isolated. We saw about 2 weeks ago, there was a fire out there. The fire department could not get out there originally. We talked about opening up that side of the park with a footbridge from the Ryan Boathouse across Pine Island. It's a beautiful, beautiful spot. Drumlin, right in the middle of 70 acres of marsh and creek and open space and wooded area. But right now, you can't get out there. You know, occasionally you'll have a teenage drinking party out there, and that's about it. The average person has probably never been to Pine Island, and it's a beautiful spot. And we're in design and engineering right now as part of the Marymount Park Master Plan to build a footbridge out there and really open up that part of the park.
Wow, you do have a lot going on.
A lot of support.
Yeah, that's true too. And in the future, I know there's a park planned at the site of the former Beachcomber, which has just been demolished, right?
Yes, the Beachcomber came down yesterday.
So the plan is for a passive park. What would that entail, Dave?
Well, I do think we're looking at it a couple of different angles. There's a planning process that we're going to go through with the counselor and the neighborhood down there. But I do think, you know, one of the reasons the mayor created this department is to take a look at coastal resiliency. And there's a number of projects we're working on in that regard. Mm. But you take a look at the value of this property, which is, I think, the largest privately owned parcel along the beach side of Quincy Shore Drive. Mm. You know, how does that play in the city's future efforts on dealing with whether it's sea rise, coastal resiliency, what have you? So, you know, I think the ultimate goal there is to create flexibility, not do anything dramatic there. We're not talking about, you know, tennis courts or pickleball or anything else like that. But to build a passive park, find an appropriate use for that location that balances with the neighborhood, but also recognize that from time to time, with a decent storm, you're going to get some spillover from the seawall that'll go across Quincy Shore Drive. So, you know, is there, you know, can we help with the hydrology in that neighborhood? I know the city has invested millions in both a pump station right behind the property. So how do we leverage ownership and control over that property now to help the entire neighborhood, not just as a park, but much like we did at Kincaid, where we recognize that hydrology and flooding is an issue in that area, and how do we leverage that parcel to help all of the parcels around it?
Yeah, it's, I mean, a long history of flooding in the Strand area there, going back decades, as you're well aware. So that definitely has to be incorporated. And I know you're working as well on the new seawalls out at House Neck to make sure that that area is mitigated as well. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah, the last big project, Joe, I failed to mention, we also oversee the cemeteries. And Pine Hill Cemetery is really the last frontier of city-owned land that is undeveloped. And yep. We worked with C. Naughton to develop about 500 new graves this past year. The next phase of that will likely take place into next year, which will be probably another 4,000. And it's the last land that we have up at the cemetery. We spent almost 15 years negotiating with the state. There's some endangered species habitat up there. So in order, we put a conservation restriction on 15 acres in order to develop the last seven. So we've been able to open up about an acre and a half this year, and the next phase will be a pretty substantial phase, and that'll occur over the course of next year as well too. So Quincy residents haven't been able to buy or purchase burial sites on a pre-need basis for a number of years, and you know, the mayor's goal is to open that up probably in about a year and a half, 2 years, so that people can take that issue on a pre-need basis and not have to worry about it.
Good to know. Good to look forward to, for sure. Anything else we should touch on right now, Dave?
That's about it, Joe. I think I'm.
Oh, is that all? A lot going on for sure, and I think, you know, the creation of your department, I think, you know, represents the fact that the city takes its natural resources seriously and recognizes the value that it has for the community.
Yeah, I did mention Julie Sullivan's work on Butler's Pond, and we're hopeful that this summer, Butler's Pond is a large catchment area. It's a drainage pond. You know, mm-hmm. When I grew up as a kid, Sailor's Pond and Butler's Pond were fed by natural springs, which they're not, and they were bottomless, which is equally ridiculous, right? But the truth is that they capture all of the stormwater from all around those neighborhoods. Yep. And with that stormwater comes everything that's in the street and the storm drains and everything else like that, and some of it's not so great. Right. So the pond fills in with sediment, it turns green from the algae, and really needs to be kept up. And unfortunately, for 75 years in the making, the city hasn't done that. So this summer, we're hopeful that the council supports an appropriation that we're seeking to actually get in there, remove a lot of the sediment from the pond. The neighborhood group down there, the Friends of Butler Pond, has been excellent. Yep. So hopefully, with Julie's leadership this summer, we'll be able to do that project as well.
All right. Again, if you could give out your phone number, Dave.
Sure. Our phone number here at Natural Resources is 617-376-1251.
All right. Appreciate your time. Good to talk to you. And hopefully next time it can be in person again.
I hope so, Joe. Good to see you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.